on the hits.
Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is for English learners, so we speak a bit slower, and we use words and sentences especially written for people learning English. These are the stories we have for you on today's program. First, the education report. Dan Friedel tells a story about college students graduating in 2021. Then Dr. Jill Robbins brings us a health story. She will talk about how the fight against COVID-19 has affected the fight against other diseases. I will return with this week's words and their stories. And finally, Ashley Thompson and Katie Weaver, with the help of John Russell, will continue our series on national parks in the United States. But first, the education report.
1 year ago, the campuses of American colleges and universities were empty. Most students were sent home in March and did not return for months. The new coronavirus forced schools to teach using the internet and video call. But it was not just teaching that changed. The graduation ceremony or commencement changed too. Students who had spent 4 years taking classes together watched the ceremony on their computers from home. There was no throwing of hats in the air to celebrate the completion of 4 years of study. There were no group photos or shared tears while saying goodbye to friends and professors. In a normal graduation ceremony, students get their diploma and a handshake from a university leader. In 2020, they saw their name and perhaps their photo on a computer screen. It was not what they expected when they started school 4 years earlier. At the beginning of 2021, most U.S. universities were going to have a video and computer-based graduation. But as more people started to get the COVID-19 vaccine, and the number of new virus cases dropped during the spring, they decided to change their plans. At the University of Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania, Sam Kelly and Kelly Shanes went to their university's graduation on May 4th. The guest speaker via video was Rebecca Skloot, a science writer and a University of Pittsburgh graduate. Her book, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, was about a vaccine that helped the world overcome illness. It told the story of a Black woman whose cells were used to create a vaccine for polio. Lacks died without getting credit for her gift to science. Shanes said the event, while different, was a lot better in person.
It was very exciting, and it did definitely make it feel more concrete. Like, we got to dress up in our cap and gowns and, like, take pictures with all of our friends and stuff. So that was definitely better than the 2020 experience, I think.
Kelly played in the school's marching band for 4 years. He was happy to be able to attend the graduation ceremony this year. However, he regrets missing one tradition in his last year of school. The university is known as Pitt, so at the last football game, the members of the band traditionally form the letters P-I-T-T on the football field. All of the members except those about to graduate, who are called seniors, leave the field. Those remaining receive cheers from everyone in the stands. Kelly hopes that maybe one day he will get a chance to relive the tradition.
And obviously not everybody is involved in a student organization where they have the opportunity to get some sense of closure, but in my instance, it would be nice to come back in the fall and get that.
Across town from Pitt is Carnegie Mellon University. The university is known for math, computer science, engineering, and robotics. On May 14th, students wearing their graduation clothing walked the sunny campus and took pictures with friends. Others worked to teach a robot how to study trees. Some were playing a ball game. Even though they had finished their work for the year, they were still in Pittsburgh because the university's graduation was 1 week away on May 22nd and 23rd. Cindy Crimmins is a vice president at Carnegie Mellon. She said the school is doing its best to keep the ceremony as close to normal as possible.
We feel really good about it. We feel like giving the students an in-person experience, even if they can't have guests, is the right thing to do for them.
Benjamin Ash from Atlanta, Georgia, was enjoying the warm weather with friends. He said, "You really only get the chance to graduate from college once." That is why he and his friends were waiting for the ceremony instead of going home.
And I think we're just excited to have the opportunity to do it this year.
Across the U.S., many colleges were working to give the same opportunity to their students. On May 14th, Boston University's students sat apart from each other and wore face coverings, but they were together for graduation. They listened to Ayanna Pressley, the first Black woman to represent Massachusetts in the U.S. Congress. She talked about the lessons she learned from civil rights leader Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and others. She told the students they need to imagine a better world and then work for it. Nubar Afeyan is one of the co-founders of Moderna, the company that created one of the successful COVID-19 vaccines. He told the Boston University advanced graduates that they were pioneers because of the way they had to find a new way to learn. At the University of North Carolina, not all of the speakers were there in person. Dr. Anthony Fauci talked to the students by video. He told them to be ready for a difficult future with the changes brought on by the pandemic. But he said their ability to succeed in school gave him confidence that they will thrive. I'm Dan Friedel.
The World Health Organization, or WHO, says the COVID-19 pandemic has set back years of efforts to end neglected tropical diseases. Neglected tropical diseases are a group of 20 diseases that affect 1.7 billion people, mainly from poor communities in tropical areas. 40% of the people affected are in Africa. These diseases are both life-threatening and physically damaging. The WHO reports great progress has been made in the treatment of these diseases over the past 10 years. It says 42 countries around the world no longer have cases of at least one disease. Welechele Welechela is director of the WHO's Neglected Tropical Diseases Department. She says she fears a lot of this good work could be undone because of the harmful effects of COVID-19. She says the pandemic has led to disruptions and delays in services for neglected tropical diseases. She says mass treatment campaigns, observations of affected areas, and the transport and giving out of medicines have been stopped. Malechela said, "All the efforts that have been done to control neglected tropical diseases, to bring about elimination in most of the affected countries, will be reversed if the focus is not kept." She added that observation and continued efforts in countries that are nearing zero cases are needed. The WHO says that guinea worm disease, one of the neglected tropical diseases, is about to be eliminated. The organization says there were only 27 human cases reported in 6 African countries last year. In 1986, there were as many as 3.5 million human cases of the disease in 21 African and Asian countries. Yaws is a long-term skin infection that can be eliminated in South Asia. And Malechela says there are other success stories. They include possible elimination of trachoma, a bacterial infection in the eye, in Morocco, Ghana, and the Gambia. And the WHO has eliminated lymphatic filariasis in 17 countries, including Togo, Malawi, and Yemen. At the end of January, the WHO announced a plan to eliminate these neglected tropical diseases by 2030. Health officials consider the plan an important part of making sure countries strengthen their health systems after COVID-19. I'm Jill Robbins.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Insects, or bugs, as we generally call them, are of course necessary in the natural environment. But they are everywhere. They get into our homes. They invade our outdoor parties. So, of course, we have expressions that use insects or bugs. The first one is really simple. If I say to someone, "You are bugging me," it means the person is annoying, like a bug. Bugs can be pests, too. So when someone is really, really annoying, we could say, "Stop pestering me." Ants can also be pests. They are so small that they can get everywhere. In fact, if we sit too long on the ground, they may even get in our pants. If you get ants in your pants, you may move or dance around to get them out. So the expression "to have ants in your pants" means you cannot sit still. You are constantly moving around. Here is an example. My friend Sylvia is full of energy. I don't think I have ever seen her sit down for longer than 10 minutes. This makes some people nervous. "Sit down, Sylvia. It's like you have ants in your pants," they might say. We often use this expression for children and Sylvia. Now, for some of our listeners, the weather is not getting warmer, but rather colder. In those places, if you are warm and comfortable, usually under many blankets, you can say you are snug as a bug in a rug. Let's listen to how we use that expression.
Wow, the wind is really blowing out there.
And the temperature has dropped 10 degrees since this morning.
So, do you still want to go out to a movie?
You know, I would love to, but right now I am snug as a bug in a rug with a cup of tea and a great book.
Doesn't sound like you're going anywhere tonight.
Maybe to the kitchen for more tea, but not outside.
In places where the weather is getting warmer, insects, like flies, may be coming out to annoy you. Sometimes their presence means that something bad or unpleasant is nearby. So we can say a fly in the ointment to point to something bad that ruins something else. Ointment is a type of medicine that you put on your skin. If a fly lands in it, you really can't use it as medicine. Let's hear that expression used in a couple of sentences. Her surprise party for her husband's birthday was nearly ready. The food was ordered, the cake was made, and all his friends were hiding in their house. Then came the fly in the ointment. His flight was canceled, meaning he would miss his party. Having a wedding on board a boat sailing along the blue sea seemed like a great idea. The weather was beautiful and everyone was happy. The only fly in the ointment was the boat's loud engine. Nobody could hear a thing, not even I do. Now flies are everywhere, and we really do not think twice about killing them. So if someone is very gentle, with no violent feelings at all, we could say that person would not harm a fly. Now let's talk about another flying insect. This one is not annoying, but rather very important. Bees are always working and make wonderful honey. So you may have heard the expression to be busy as a bee. But did you know that if you have a bee in your bonnet, you are angry about something? Something is annoying you. Maybe you haven't heard it. The expression is a bit old. After all, a bonnet is a type of hat worn by women as early as medieval times. But sometimes we use this expression when we want to make fun of someone who is acting angry, but for no good reason. We don't want to be a bee in your bonnet, so we won't tell you again and again and again to listen to VOA Learning English. That would be annoying. We just hope you will. And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
Today, we explore a national park and UNESCO World Heritage Site in the American Southwest. This national park, near the city of Carlsbad, New Mexico, is unusual in a major way. It is mostly underground. Carlsbad Caverns National Park contains more than 100 caves below the surface of the desert. Most are closed to the public, but anyone can visit the main attraction, one of the largest caves in the world. Huge, incredible, inspiring. Words like these come to mind as visitors enter a world of silence, darkness, and cold, almost 230 meters under the ground. An elevator lowers you into the world of Carlsbad Cavern. It is silent, except for the quiet voices of guides and visitors. It is not fully dark, though. The National Park Service has enough lighting to see many of the beautiful formations all around. The temperature in the cave is about 13 degrees Celsius.
A cavern is a large cave, but Carlsbad Cavern is really a long series of chambers. One of these is called the Big Room. The Big Room measures more than 3 hectares. The ceiling is 77 meters high. The Big Room is the single largest underground chamber ever found in North America. The Big Room and other parts of the cavern contain huge, sharp formations of minerals. People are free to explore the lit formations in the Big Room, but park rangers must guide visitors to other areas of the cave. Stalactites hang from the ceiling. Stalagmites rise from the floor. Some even meet to create a column. Other formations look like needles, popcorn, pearls, and flowers.
One of the first questions visitors might have is, how did Carlsbad Cavern form? Guides explain that it did not result from the action of waterways like other limestone caves. Its creator was sulfuric acid. The limestone developed about 250 million years ago. Then, within the last 20 million years, movements in the earth pushed the rock upward, forming the Guadalupe Mountains. Today, these mountains extend from West Texas into Southeast New Mexico. The action of oil and natural gas created hydrogen sulfide in the limestone. The hydrogen sulfide reacted with oxygen in rainwater moving through the rock. Sulfuric acid developed. The acid created the caves by dissolving the limestone in its path. Later, the water and most of the acid left the caves as the Guadalupe Mountains continued to rise. This permitted fresh water to move through. The fresh water left behind minerals. These minerals became the formations and shapes on the ceilings, walls, and floors of the caves.
People are not the only visitors to Carlsbad Caverns National Park. About 400,000 Mexican free-tailed bats come from Mexico every summer to give birth in the big cave. As the sun goes down each day, thousands of adult bats fly out of the cave. It can take from 20 minutes to more than 2 hours for them all to leave. They go to nearby river valleys to feed on insects. Then, toward morning, they return to the bat cave within Carlsbad Cavern. Park Service rangers explain that mother bats find their babies by remembering their location, their smell, and the sound of their cry. Mothers and their babies, called pups, hang in groups on the ceiling. They spend the day resting and feeding. While the adults go out at night for food, the young bats hang out in the cave for 4 or 5 weeks. Then, in July or August, they join their mothers on these nightly flights. Finally, in late October or early November, the bats all leave and return to Mexico. But they always come back the next year.
It is possible that it was the bats that led ancient people to discover the cave. Archaeologists and others have found evidence of Ice Age hunters near the cave entrance. They have also found pieces of spear points left about 10,000 years ago. More recently, Apache Indians painted pictures at the entrance, and evidence of one of their cooking areas was found beside a nearby path. Around 1900, a teenage cowboy named James Larkin White began to explore the cave. Jim White told his story in the 1932 book, The Discovery and History of Carlsbad Caverns. Here is a reading of his description of his first sight of the bats and the big cave.
I thought it was a volcano, but then I'd never seen a volcano, nor never before had I seen bat swarm, for that matter. During my life on the range, I'd seen plenty of prairie whirlwinds, but this thing didn't move. It remained in one spot, spinning its way upward. I watched it for perhaps a half hour, until my curiosity got the better of me. Then I began investigating.
Jim White told how he built a ladder from rope, wire, and sticks, and returned to the entrance of the cave a few days later.
Standing at the entrance of the tunnel, I could see ahead of me a darkness so absolutely black it seemed a solid. The light of my lantern was but a sickly glow. Nevertheless, I forged ahead, and with each step the tunnel grew larger, and I felt as though I was wandering into the very core of the Guadalupe Mountains.
Several years later, in 1918, Jim White took a professional photographer into the cave. Ray Davis's pictures of the big room appeared in the New York Times newspaper. National interest began to grow. In 1923, scientists from the National Geographic Society explored the caves. The following year, President Calvin Coolidge named Carlsbad a national monument. Presidents can declare national monuments, but Congress must act to establish a national park. And that is what Congress did in 1930. Since then, parts of Carlsbad Caverns have been used for movie sets, weddings, even meetings of the Carlsbad City Council. Most visitors go to the main cavern, but some experienced cavers are permitted to explore five wild caves in the park. And in another one, scientists are studying microbes in search of a cure for cancer.
As for Jim White, he became chief ranger of Carlsbad Caverns. In one story in his book, he talks about all of the work that was done in the area.
I doubt if you can understand how happy this modernizing has made me. It's like the pleasant end to a dream.
I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
And that is our program for today. Thank you for listening. Join us again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Ana Mateo.